Thank you so much for hearing this bill today, Senate Bill 45. This bill, Mr. Chairman, is about protecting our children from becoming addicted to nicotine. It is about clearly restricting sales to and possession of these products to youngsters. As I'm sure you're aware, electronic cigarettes are an exploding trend in smoking, usually referred to as vaping. Public health advocacy, with the help of proven scientific evidence, is truly winning the war against tobacco. Use of traditional tobacco products, cigarettes, and related products is clearly on the decline in this country. However, tobacco manufacturers have acknowledged this trend and are responding with a barrage of new smoking options, sometimes fashionable, in the form of e-cigarettes and related devices. They are designed to appeal to a wide variety of consumers, but particularly to young people. The more time goes by, the more young adolescents will become addicted to this unhealthy habit. The more the industry will continue to market to and profit by these habits, while we seem to give tacit approval that these products are safe and harmless, which is, Mr. Chairman, far from the truth. We must act quickly to face this new industry and help protect young Alaskans who are being targeted. We have several members, people invited for testimony. I think you'll enjoy hearing them, and I'm sure you'll hear from several lobbyists that are involved in this as well. I just urge you to do the right thing for our children.
Senator Stevens, thank you. I don't see any questions at this time from the table. Mr. Lampkin, you want to launch into your portion of this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I have a brief presentation for you to sort of recap, rewind, review what these products generally. E-cigarettes are a new modern technology to replace traditional tobacco smoking. They create an aerosol by using a battery to heat up a liquid. That liquid usually contains nicotine, flavorings, and other additives. The users inhale this aerosol into their lungs. And most e-cigarettes consist of four components: a cartridge or reservoir, which holds the liquid solution, also referred as e-juice or e-liquid or some of the street names, contain a varying amount of nicotine, of flavors, and a variety of chemicals, many of which we don't always know. It includes a heating element, also referred to as an atomizer, a battery source, usually a battery that's rechargeable, and a mouthpiece that the person uses to inhale. They come in a wide variety of shapes and styles and sizes, as demonstrated by this slide. And in some instances, they've been specifically designed to discreetly reveal common household or classroom items, such as Sharpies, markers, highlighters, thumb drives, watches, to the extent of your imagination. And while the content of these liquids being inhaled is often a moving target and largely unknown, or at least not verified, as the FDA and health industries are constantly trying to catch up with these product changes and reformulations. What we do know is that these devices are designed to produce ultra-fine particles, and particles so small that they cannot be removed by HVAC systems, and when breathed in, these particles go deep into the lungs and affect the cells at a molecular level. So by using age-old marketing techniques, our e-cigarette manufacturers have secured their position in the foreseeable future. All they needed to do was pull out some old storybooks, playbooks rather, to show their popularity among celebrities for having sex appeal being what cool people do. The brand has had paid-for campaigns, very sophisticated ones, on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, other social medias to promote their image, to review their products, and offer their products for further promotion. It includes some company-sponsored ads that associate vaping. That's vaping, by the way, is what we're talking about here, is inhaling these products, is them being fun. They promote relaxation, freedom, and defying parents and teachers. Or inversely, perhaps Even worse, the messaging has resulted in many students and parents believing that these products are healthy and safe. Surely by now you've heard that a big part of this program and the flavors that have been huge in establishing e-cigarette attractiveness to young people. And while efforts are underway to curb and outright prohibit flavorings, other than tobacco and menthol flavors, they're still out there on the market. At the time of this presentation, when I prepared this, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or also known as the FDA, was still finding its footing on how to approach e-cigarette products and regulate it, and it still continues to do so. But one important fact I need to point out on this slide is that since this, I prepared this one back in October of 2021, it was announced by the FDA that specifically at least the tobacco-flavored cartridge marketed by R.J. Reynolds, in particular under the brand name of Vuse, it was believed that product helps certain vaping devices offer smokers to quit traditional cigarettes. That assistance is more significant than the risks of ensnaring a new generation. And this is what continues to stir the controversy on these products, that the FDA has weighed in and has at least suggested that these do help smokers quit smoking cigarettes. And while I believe there's general agreement here, that e-cigarettes should show a pathway to quitting smoking traditional cigarettes, I don't know that a lot of folks would disagree with that, that that's at least a pathway. That the nature of this non-combustible e-cigarette product are safer, or also marketed as less toxic than smoking traditional cigarettes. It's argued that should not be translated into assuming that inhaling these alternative substances, particularly nicotine, into young people's lungs as it being in and of itself safe or not toxic. E-cigarettes do not end addiction. They simply replace the delivery system for that addiction. Of course, data is still being compiled. This one here is a bit dated now. You'll be hearing from health advocacy groups here shortly about these numbers, and they're going to change. It's showing a worsening trend of these products being used by our young people. Now, this is a small sampling from last spring of devices confiscated in classrooms in the Anchorage School District. It's a very small sampling, I'm going to stress that. Also want to point out there in the middle left, right, is a watch, made to resemble a watch. It's happening in bathrooms, in hallways, classrooms, on the bus, on the way to and from school. Here's an infamous photograph of what's known as the Waxman hearings, messaging from the industry of being safe, not harmful. Nowadays the buzzwords are that this is a healthy alternative, safer than tobacco, less toxic. But again, how long will it take for us to, and how much harm will be done before we discover that these products are not healthy, they do have toxic ingredients, and they're not safe. Here's a slide I borrowed from Dr. Zink. She has borrowed some of these slides from me. This was one of her slides at the 2020 Annual Policy Forum of the American Cancer Society Action Network, where she was briefing them and made clear, kind of touched on all the things that I've touched on here, that the campaign has checked all the boxes here. They've got the flavors. They've got youth resonating themes. They've priced it low, a lot of promotions. It's easy to use and discreet. Exposure to a lot of ads on social media, television. And of course, the health claims that it's safer doesn't mean it's safe. It's less toxic doesn't mean it's not toxic. So you're going to hear about some testimony that this is a wonderful way that adults were able to quit smoking. I don't think anyone's going to oppose that. The problem here is that we don't want to see youth start smoking. You're going to hear that as regards the age restrictions contained in this bill, raising the age to purchase, possess, sell, age 21, particularly as regards the military. I'd like to remind the committee that this started with the military. Now, before it was even federal law, it started with the military. It is federal law now, and this would align state statute with feds. You'll also hear that
Mr. Lampkin, could you repeat that? It started with the military, so you mean that the military has a 21 prohibition?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Okay. That is a fact.
All right, I just want to get that on the, be clear and get that on the record.
As regards the tax rate contained in this bill, you're going to hear that it's too high, that our boroughs and localities have an existing tax on the books, and that this rate will put drive people back to tobacco smoking. That is a matter of policy. It's something to be discussed and debated here. I guess we want to keep our eye on the ball to protect our youth from this addiction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes the presentation. I would be happy to maybe gloss over the sectional.
Let me see. Any questions before we do the sectional from committee members? Okay, we're seeing none. Please continue with your sectional.
Just give me one moment here, Mr. Chairman, to switch notebooks.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
I do have a question. Mr. Lampkin, you've talked about some of the ills and some of the diseases that are related to vaping, alluded to them, but I didn't hear any disease in particular. I mean, we know with regular cigarettes, you do have emphysema with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. You got small cell lung cancers. What kind of tumors, if there are any, because I'm unfamiliar with e-cigarettes, to tell you the truth. Can you tell me what kind of health hazards they do have?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I refer you to slide number 3 on the screen at this time.
Okay.
The 5 primary ingredients that we know of that are generally in use and contained in these liquids are on the left: glycerol, propylene glycol, flavors, nicotine, of course, and benzoic acid. Lately, there's also a lot of, with the nicotines in particular, you could kind of focus in on any one of these. And I need to state clearly that I'm not a chemist, nor am I a scientist, but my understanding of these is generalized. You'll be hearing from industry reps to go into details on the chemicals and the science of it. However, I understand the nicotines are nowadays made into salts so that they break down in your body much more quickly for that high that you get. On the right are some other ingredients, formaldehyde, for example. As your own background in the medical work, I'm sure that you can agree that formaldehyde is not something that we want to put around living tissue. Heavy metals at the bottom there, lead, nickel, tin, aluminum, mercury, and so forth, are also very toxic, known cancer agents. There's arsenic, cadmium, a number of those carcinogens. Although, again, as you'll hear from the industry, not enough time has gone by to make that data known, but it is a matter of time before things like these, and popcorn lung, as it's listed there, become a major problem.
Mr. Chairman, if I could restate my question. My question is not what the ingredients are. I can all see the alcohols that are up there and the benzoic acid. I want to know what kind of cancers, if there are a variety of carcinogens that are out there, what kind of other diseases that are debilitating, like COPD, like emphysema, and those kind of things. That's more what I'm looking for.
Mr. Lampkin?
And maybe you don't have the answer. It might be somebody else that has the answer as well.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I'd be happy to get you a list of that, as well as the health advocates online are going to be speaking to that too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and we, just on that point, we will have in our invited testimony Christy Knight, Program Manager for the Tobacco Prevention and Control, Joe Darnell, Chief Investigator, Tobacco Enforcement Youth Education Program. Both of those are in the Department of Health and Social Services. Emily.
Neenan.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Government Relations, American Cancer Society. Megan Bolter, Western Regional Director for Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation, and Dr. Kirsten Johnson, Science Senior Director of Secondary Education, Anchorage School District. So those are our invited testimonies, testifiers. And available for questions is Nancy Mead, the General Counsel of the Court System, Katie Steffens, Deputy Program Manager of Tobacco Prevention and Control at Hess, and Dan Stickle, Chief Economist, Department of Revenue. But so that's our list. And so, okay, seeing no further questions at this time, Mr. Lampkin, I believe now we're ready to proceed to the sectional analyses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin once again. For sake of allowing all of the testimony to occur today, it was suggested to me that I maybe just touch on the most significant parts of the bill that would be new laws. I would, and by doing that, I want to make clear that by and large, this bill pretty much is all conforming amendments to, number one, align e-cigarettes with tobacco across the board, like laws of which have been on the books for decades, and number two, to raise uniformly raise the age from 19 to 21 years old in order to buy, sell, and possess. Just to make that clear. So therefore, I would skip to, say, Section 4. This was a significant new policy that would ban tobacco and electronic smoking products sales over the internet. Section 10 is a section, AS 2196055, would require manufacturers of electronic cigarettes products, smoking products sold in the state, to get a general liability insurance policy in the amount of $10 million. This section was added in the last committee, and I believe we have a representative from the Division of Insurance to speak to that. We are going to want to work on that section. Section 12, 4350105C, similar to and related to the internet sales ban, would have common carriers that are delivering these products verify the age of recipients before they're actually delivered. Section 15, 435310, carves out these products from those products that contain marijuana, because these devices, the cartridges that you put in the devices, they can be swapped out to have THC or cannabinoids contained and not just nicotine. In some instances, it's possible, although at this time I'm not aware specifically, but I believe it's possible that they could have combined nicotine and THC, cannabinoids, CBD, so forth. Section 17 is new. It would 4350320 would ban the electronic smoking products to have any flavorings other than, I believe, tobacco flavor and perhaps menthol, and that they be clearly packaged as containing nicotine. Likewise, that they not resemble household or school objects. I believe, Mr. Chairman, that's it for substantive changes that are not otherwise generally conforming to existing tobacco and age limit restrictions.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I do see the Section 35 applies to the effective date of January 1st, 2022, so it's a retroactive date. And it says it's going to add e-cigarettes to the existing tax structure for tobacco products. How is that going to affect sales of e-cigarettes starting January 1st? Is it going to be a retroactive tax, or is the tax going to start another date?
Through Chair, Senator Van Imhoff, we would intend that this bill has sat for a while. We would intend to change that to 2023.
2023, okay.
Thank you, Senator Van Imhoff. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess trying to see where this tax lies in terms and relations to tobacco tax, in terms on a tax rate, or, and if they could talk about the tax increase this would have for users.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, please, I don't quite follow the question there.
Yeah, I guess, what is the tax rate? If, you know, what's the tax increase for the users? How is this tax comparable to tobacco current tax? And would this be one of the highest in the country if it was applied today?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. Currently, it's 75% of the wholesale value of the product, and how we look at that product is a moving target. There are other states that tax only the liquid itself, and that is a discussion or policy decision to be made. It would put us among the highest. As you're going to hear shortly, Alaska is considered pretty low, poor graded by the Cancer Lung Association in terms compared to other states. So we would be high, and where we set that tax policy is definitely something that needs to be examined.
Just as a follow-up.
Do we know sort of the social economic class of e-cigarette users in our state of Alaska?
That is statistical data that is available, and you're going to be presented with that shortly.
Okay. And I
follow-up?
I guess my question would be my presumption, and I guess we'll find out later, would be that this probably will be the largest tax on the community that can probably at least afford it, and I doubt, just like any other sin tax, that people will just stop using, that they will substitute other means necessary and other staples to go ahead and afford that. I'm just a little concerned about that, Mr. Chair.
Just a comment, not a question in there, right?
Yes, correct.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I'm just looking at section 17. You pointed out a new subsection prohibiting distributors from selling ESP with flavorings. Have other states done that? Prohibited flavorings?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. Yes, that should be in your packet, and if it's not, it will be. The Public Law Health Forum, Public Health Law Center has published data to that effect, and I don't have it right in front of me, but yes, other states are doing this.
Follow-up,
ma'am.
It's just something that I think we should think about. It just that seems prescriptive to the detail of, I don't think we would regulate necessarily a restaurant or a grocery store to prohibit the number of calories or sugars or grams or whatnot in what a restaurant or a store can offer. I think that it's one thing to change the age. I mean, I understand the intent, and that's the struggle. I mean, we want to decrease the amount of usage. You saw the graph where kids are using it more because juuling and e-cigarettes are attractive and they taste nice. But I just think as a whole, just putting that aside, being that heavy-handed on how a business can conduct themselves by what flavors they can offer. You know, don't sell very salty crackers. Don't sell, you know, I mean, I don't know if I agree.
Further questions from the table? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Section 4, I'm just curious who the enforcement agency would be for internet sales, and then would there be a penalty on the purchaser of the product or the, well, I assume there would be on the seller.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, thank you for that question. That is a challenge. When we discussed this in the past, it's not, first of all, been done in other states. And we have found, and you may hear from the vendors out there that, and from our state enforcement folks, that the business community tends to police itself. That amendment would help support the storefront small business community, and that don't want that competition. That would help them. It would also drive that clientele to the storefront.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Section 6, it increases the age of which a business license and endorsement, a company with a business license and endorsement basically says if you have a business license and endorsement, you can't have anyone under 21 years of age sell this product, the electronic smoking product, increasing it from 19. And I think I've seen a few comments submitted about gas stations, people concerned about 19, 20-year-olds not being able, impacting their jobs. Is that something that you've heard or something that you've contemplated at all?
The Chair, Senator Wilikowski, this, again, is conforming language. I suppose it could be argued the same as, say, a bar owner that can't hire folks that are under 21 years of age. So in this instance, it could just simply mean those transactions couldn't be done if there wasn't someone at least 21 years old serving them the tobacco product.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions? Mr. Lampkin, are you, where are we at in your presentation? Towards the end?
I've completed a summary of the sectional analysis with those sections that were new policy that were not conforming.
Any other added comments before we go to public testimony? I mean, invited testimony. I read the script. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lampkin, I guess one of the things I was wondering, do you have the amount of money that's spent on health care related directly or indirectly to smoking or e-cigarettes per year here in Alaska?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, I do not handy, but I can get that to you if one of our invited testifiers do not have that information.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
My follow-up question is that will this bill actually lower those numbers if it's put into law? Or do you anticipate that?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, I think you will hear that specifically as or especially as regards taxing products of this nature, it is shown a data-driven showing that consumption does decrease. It does drive people away from these addictive behaviors.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I'm looking on page 7 at section 14, and it's the excise tax levied. Now, the issue with the electronic e-cigarettes is that it's two parts. You actually have the battery-operated hardware, and then you have the Juul or the, whatever you call it, the oils. So is the tax going to be both on the hardware and on the oils, or is it going to just be on the oils or the juice, I guess, whatever you want to call it? So how is that going to be distinguished, if at all, between the two items?
Through the Chair, Senator Von Heimhoff, that approach has been difficult to craft. Because the products vary so widely, some are a disposable single unit, others you can disassemble and swap out parts. And so based on that information and trends of other states, we so far have taken this approach to tax all of it. Similarly, with not only with this definition as being taxed, but also possession and sales, the analogy we've used occasionally is similar to, say, fishing on the Kenai River. If you're not actually, you don't actually have a line in the water, but you're in possession of the bait and the tackle, you're still written a ticket for violating the fishing laws, if that's helpful. Or tax it the same way.
Great.
Thank you. So, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lampkin, I guess most of the concern around e-smoking was not the actual ones that were sold in legitimate stores, but a lot of them were aftermarket products. How will this help sort of to stop the aftermarket products in terms of the dangers? And, you know, I had a physician in my office yesterday advocating for more, you know, the use of e-cigarettes versus smoking. And, you know, they stopped by and I had another person present more data from the FDA saying that they did, in their latest findings in October 21, have products. And you said earlier that it wasn't cleared as an alternative, but in this report they said it was. So I'm getting a lot of conflicting information from different physicians and different entities. So I'm a little confused on a lot of this.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, yeah, I thought I had tried to touch upon and make more clear that when this was originally presented and written, that this had been the case. But as of October 21, the FDA has come out and said, with at least that one product from R.J. Reynolds, at least, that it is beginning to show that use of e-cigarette products can help folks move away from smoking traditional tobacco products. But that in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean that it might be safer, but it isn't proven to be safe.
Correct. So I guess.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, if I could for a follow-up then. I guess if we want someone to use a safer product and taxing has shown to decrease any usage, utilization of anything, so if you tax, you know, put an alcohol tax, you're going to decrease the consumption of alcohol. Same thing for smoking, we've seen that. And same thing for an income tax. Too much of an income tax, you decrease people working. But I guess the question here is that why do we want to decrease the use of a safer option if physicians are recommending to their patients, hey, you should stop smoking and try e-cigarettes to help them decrease the sensation? We're not sort of helping that industry or helping make her, I don't want to say a healthier choice, but a safer choice.
Is that a question?
I guess the question is, why do we want to put such a heavy tax on an item that this physician in their facility is advocating for us this as a safer option?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, so, and Senator Stevens can confirm or correct me. I think the focus so far has been first getting the policy on the books that e-cigarettes should be regulated, be restricted to youth, to help deter the beginning of an addiction. When we enter the tax component of this, I think there's less emphasis on the importance of the tax. That there should be a tax. At this time, I'm not advocating for any particular level of tax.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could
Senator Olson.
Make a comment on it, unless you were going to step in, Senator Stevens, has to do with the number of people that are out there that are trying to get off of it are quite a bit less than the children that are being, at least the studies that I've read medically, the children that are being addicted and going down that path is far more significant than otherwise. And with myself having younger children, I'm very concerned about something like that. So far, it hasn't been a problem, partly because in rural Alaska it is hard to find vaping products, but they are finding their way out there. And I'm very much in favor of doing whatever we can to go ahead and make sure that those that are minors are not swept up in this craze that is sweeping some parts of the nation.
Mr. Lamkin?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, on that point, share an anecdote with the committee, if it pleases you. When I was preparing for this hearing and others, there was one evening I was going over my notes that I asked my son, who's a freshman right now at JDHS here, he's 14. I asked him if he'd been exposed to these products. And he sheepishly told me a story that when he was in sixth grade, age 11, 12, he had some friends that had found one on the street, and they had it with them, and he found it, and he brought it on the bus, and his friends were really struggling or pressuring him to give it to them so they could try it. And he admitted to me that he just simply decided to throw it out the window and get rid of it. And I, you know, reminded him of my, I really don't like littering, but that, because, and also that in that instance, someone else could have found it and used it. But he countered it to me that he didn't want to give it to the bus driver because then he would be too dorky amongst his friends. But I appreciated his honesty and his leadership in that moment and the decision that he made. But the point here, I guess I'm sharing, is that it is in our schools, and the thrust of this bill is to get it out of kids' hands. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Senator Stevens.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the comments, and I appreciate the senator's approach from a medical standpoint. You know, there are two issues in this bill. The first is to try to keep it out of the hands of children. And we've had all sorts of discussions with teachers who really can't do much about it. The kids can take these smoking devices into the bathroom, and nobody knows they even have them. And it's hard for teachers to control that. So the first issue, I think, is keeping it out of hands of young people. The second issue, of course, is taxation. I don't know the right answer to that, Senator Wilson, how much that taxation should be. You'll be hearing from some very well-paid lobbyists trying to get you to lower the taxation. And if that's what you want to do, go ahead. But the two issues are separate, and let's keep our eye on that. I think there should be some taxation. I'm not sure exactly how high it should be, because as Mr. Lamkin has said, there are some people who, adults, and frankly, I'm less concerned about adults. You know, that's their problem. I have many friends who smoke, and I haven't over the years, and it's been encouraged. I was sharing with a lobbyist that As a young soldier, we received three cigarettes in every K ration pack, and I had friends who, when I was going through Officers Canada School, I had friends who lived in New York City, and I would always bring a carton of cigarettes to them because they were only $3 for a whole carton. I don't know what they are today. But I'm concerned about the tobacco industry. I'm concerned about the damage that has occurred because of their products to so many people, to my own parents. So two issues, keeping it out of hands of kids and finding out what the right answer is on taxation. Appreciate the questions.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. And just thank you for the documents you included. It looks like more than half the states have some sort of tax, and just to be clear, Alaska does not have any tax.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's correct.
Okay, and if I could follow up.
Senator.
Is there a federal tax on e-cigarettes?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I honestly don't know. Thank you for that question. I'll find out for you.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, just for the record, I don't think any, I do not oppose the age of this bill, and I think I would find it hard to believe anyone advocating the use of e-cigarettes to minors and keep them out of the age of the kids. And so I just, taking this from a purely perspective, just want to make sure we don't hurt a economy within our workforce here in Alaska. So that's just my concern and some of the other social economic use and abuse of this as well, what damage it can cause.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? I have one. So if you could break an urban myth legend for me, maybe you can, maybe you can't, maybe one of these people that it's invited can, or maybe you have to go research it. I have heard that one of these, this product that you've shown us here, just one, what is it, cartridge or whatever, one of those is equivalent to smoking one pack of cigarettes. Has anybody else heard that, or is that just me?
Mr. Chairman, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. So a single cigarette, and then it varies greatly, but I believe I can safely say with a simple search that a single cigarette contains anywhere from 8 to 20 milligrams of nicotine. If there's 20 cigarettes to a pack, then that goes up. That means 160 to 400 milligrams per pack of cigarettes. Nicotine content of e-cigarettes typically varies between 3 and 36 milligrams per milliliter in the volume of liquid. If you assume that one cartridge is equivalent to a pack of cigarettes, then that scales to 60 milligrams up to 720 milligrams per cartridge. Now, most recent generations of these e-cigarette cartridges and products contain as much nicotine up to 60 milligrams per milliliter, which, again, if that cartridge represents a pack of cigarettes, that's 1,200, that's triple of what a pack of cigarettes. And I've heard anecdotally that there are students out there that get so addicted to it, they've got their pencil doing their homework in their right hand and there's e-cigarette in their left, and they're burning through one of those in a day. And when I mention the 60 milligram per milliliter, that's typically in that salt form that I mentioned earlier, to help speed up and increase the delivery of that nicotine to the brain. So I hope that answers your question. There's not a concrete, finite, one single answer. It varies greatly, but I think generally speaking, they do contain more nicotine than a pack of cigarettes, than one cartridge.
Okay, thank you. All right, no further questions from the table. The presenters have nothing else to add at this time. We're going to go to our invited testimony, and we're going to start with Christy Knight, Program Manager, Tobacco and Prevention Control, DHSS. Christy, are you with us?
Good morning. This is Christy Knight.
Good afternoon. We're going to do a sound check. go ahead. Please put yourself on the record and proceed with your presentation, and please hold your comments to 5 minutes, please, in case we got questions.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christy Knight. I am the program manager for the State of Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program within the Division of Public Health. And I want to thank you for the opportunity today to share with you how nicotine products are hurting youth across the nation and in Alaska, and to provide consultation on strategies that we know prevent youth from starting these products. Tobacco is the leading preventable cause of death in Alaska, with smoking leading to about 700 deaths in our state each year. Alaska's made great progress over the past couple of decades to bring the smoking rates down for both adults and youth, but this is now threatened due to the ongoing epidemic of e-cigarette use by youth. This is shown in the most recent statewide estimate of youth use of tobacco and or nicotine. As of 2019, Alaska's Youth Risk Behavior Survey estimates that about 1 in 4 high school students report current use of e-cigarettes. Almost half had ever tried them. Now, by contrast, only 1 in 21 adults use these products in Alaska. National estimates through the National Youth Tobacco Survey confirmed that even during the pandemic, adolescent use of e-cigarettes remains a large threat to public health, with about 2 million middle and high school students currently using e-cigarettes. A quarter of high school students currently using e-cigarettes are using them daily and are likely struggling with nicotine dependence. Now, the world has changed since the start of the pandemic, and we can't compare the 2021 survey to prior reports, but the data are clearly telling us that we have some work to do in preventing youth from starting and helping youth quit. Now, one major challenge that we face in preventing these products from getting into the hands of youth is monitoring new and emerging products, which I feel that I heard committee members speak to today, and the time it takes to review and update policies and regulations. Now, e-cigarettes are relatively new. They entered the market in 2007, and as you heard earlier, we've seen a large variety of devices enter the market. Alaska had to update our youth access law in 2019 to prevent the sale of e-cigarettes to youth. And most recently, our program has been researching emerging products using synthetic nicotine, which is nicotine that is made in a lab rather than derived from tobacco leaves. But the bottom line is that nicotine is addictive and harmful to youth. Whether it is tobacco-derived or synthetically created, nicotine disrupts healthy brain development. It rewires the brain, it makes it hard for youth to control attention, to learn, and it primes their brain for addiction to other drugs. Research shows that youth who use e-cigarettes are at significantly greater risk of starting cigarettes. In addition to nicotine, and as you heard earlier, e-cigarettes may contain ultrafine particles, flavorants such as diacetyl, volatile and organic compounds such as benzene, and that's found in car exhaust, heavy metals such as nickel, tin, and lead. Short-term e-cigarette use has been shown to impair lung function, resulting in difficulty breathing. E-cigarettes have only been sold, as you mentioned earlier, since 2007 in the U.S., and scientists are still studying the long-term effects of e-cigarette use. I did hear a question about FDA approval. These products are not FDA approved as treatment for nicotine dependence. There were some products recently approved through the FDA's pre-market review process, which is a separate process and may be adding to the questions asked. There is some evidence that it may be less harmful for non-pregnant adult smokers to completely switch to e-cigarettes. But as we mentioned, that's not the same as treating dependence, and that's not the same as safe. And again, the primary user we see in Alaska is youth. Fortunately, we know that we can apply the same strategies we applied with cigarettes to e-cigarettes and nicotine products. The Tobacco Prevention and Control Program, along with our many partners, statewide have taken the rule book on how to reduce smoking, tailored it for Alaska, and we made sure that these strategies are put into effect long enough to see the impact, including supporting efforts locally and statewide to prevent tobacco use, educating on the health harms of tobacco and nicotine use, and providing effective strategies to address tobacco use. We support a statewide quit line that provides free, confidential help with quitting and an educational program for youth and parents, and collecting, analyzing, and sharing statewide and community-specific data about tobacco use. Now, increasing the price of tobacco products is one of the most effective ways to prevent a youth initiation and to prevent consumption. Youth and young adults are 2 to 3 times more likely to respond to price increases, and price increases are even more effective when implemented in combination with other proven strategies, such as increasing the minimum legal age. Now, Senate Bill 45 includes both of these proven strategies, increasing the minimum age and increasing the price. It also creates additional protections for youth through restricting online sales and implementing age verification processes when shipping or transporting tobacco products in Alaska. On the line and available for questions today is Katie Steffens, Deputy Program Manager for the State of Alaska Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. Katie has researched e-cigarettes extensively and is well-versed in proven tobacco prevention strategies for youth. And she's joined today's call and is prepared to answer the questions that we heard today and additional questions that you may have about e-cigarettes, synthetic and tobacco-derived nicotine, health implications for youth, and proven strategies to reduce and prevent youth initiation.
Ms. Knight, are you about wrapped up? If you could wrap up, send the rest of your testimony to the committee, it would be appreciated.
Yes, absolutely. That concludes my testimony through the chair, and I want to thank you again for the opportunity to speak to you today, and I am available for questions.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your testimony. Is there any research on the cost of e-cigarettes to the state in terms of health costs, lost productivity, et cetera?
We do not have current data available on e-cigarette costs to the state of Alaska, but we do have data on what we're seeing by way of prevalence among youth. We're still looking at the long-term health effects, so I'm sure we will continue to monitor that information, and once we have enough information, we will ensure that we publish that and make that available to the public.
Follow up, Senator.
Yeah, and then do you have any research on how kids are getting e-cigarettes? What's the predominant way they're getting them?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. Our youth risk behavior survey shows that the primary source of youth getting e-cigarettes, the large majority borrow them from older peers. So social sources are a large source.
Thank you. Follow up?
And does this bill adequately address that aspect of it? Because you can raise the age. You're already violating the law. Does this bill adequately address that aspect of it?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, could I clarify, are you asking if there's evidence to show that increasing the age will reduce social access through social sources for youth?
I'm asking, there's already kids we've heard in middle school, kids in high school who are under the age of 18 that are using e-cigarettes, and so if you raise the age to 21, they're still violating it. And so I'm just curious if this bill gives the department or the state the tools it needs to ensure that kids aren't getting it. You raise the age, well, they're already violating the law. Does this bill do something to otherwise prevent the kids from getting it?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, thank you. That's an excellent question, and I appreciate you asking that question. because we know that youth obtain these products, close to half of youth obtain these products from their peers, by increasing the age to 21, you increase the gap between high schoolers and those who are legally able to purchase these products. So this is shown for that reason to be an effective strategy in reducing access to youth for e-cigarettes.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no further questions, we're going to go to Joe Darnell, Chief Investigator for Hess in the Tobacco Enforcement and Youth Education Program. Mr. Darnell, are you there? And if you are, introduce yourself and hold your time to 5 minutes, please.
Yes, Senator. My name is Joe Darnell, and I'm the Chief Investigator for Underage Tobacco and Nicotine Youth Access Enforcement for the state of Alaska. He's housed in behavioral health, and I will keep my comments short. Mr. Lampkin always does a great job when he explains stuff. I always feel I have nothing to say after he talks. So I'll just start with giving a little bit of how much we're seeing in the field that the stores and stuff, the vape stores, are, because we'll probably hear how they don't sell to anyone underage. Prior to 2019, when vaping was added to the youth access laws, we went out, I had my section go out, we did an informal survey just to see what the sell rate of vaping products was to underage people to see if the law was even needed. After a quick survey on it, and like I said, this was informal, it was just easy math, and we saw a 50% sell rate in Anchorage. So half the stores in Anchorage were selling to youth, and statewide it was around 35%. So once the law got passed, we started doing more active enforcement with it. We've gotten down into the mid-20s sell rate to underage. Then the pandemic hit, and we haven't been able to do as much active enforcement, so we really don't have some numbers. But when we talk to answer some of the questions on the raising to 21, if one, it does, like Ms. Knight said, it opens that gap between kids in high school and people that are actually legal to buy. It also helps our merchants, it helps our vendors out there, because we've got three age-restricted products in the state, major age-restricted products, alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana. Alcohol and marijuana are both 21. Tobacco being 19, it changes it with the state IDs and state licenses set up. If it's set up vertically, you're under 21. If it's a horizontal layout on it, you're 21 or older, and that's verified by the state. So it makes it so much easier for our vendors, for our merchants, because the license comes out, and if it's a horizontal layout, they already know that they're 21, it's been verified by the state. Now all they have to do is make sure that the actual person in it's not expired. So it does help that. It also helps the vendors across the board with the 21, because nationally, all our national chains are at 21 because it's a federal law, but some of our mom-and-pop shops and the smaller ones around, the FDA enforces the 21, the state would enforce 19. So they'll enforce 19 within their shops and not 21 when the shop down the street is enforcing 21. So it'll help even the playing field within the merchant community, which is always helps. And Senator Stevens, before I stop, I will answer your question that you said, you remember a carton of cigarettes was $3. You didn't know what they are now. Now they're anywhere from $100 to $120 a carton. And that's my testimony, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions from the table, thanks for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Emily Neenan, Alaska Government Relations Director, American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network in Anchorage. Emily, can you hear us? And if you can, put yourself on the record, and please limit your testimony to 5 minutes. Thank you.
Great. Co-Chair Bishop and members of the committee, is my sound coming through okay?
Yes, you're perfect.
Great. For the record, my name is Emily Neenan. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I have been working in tobacco prevention policy here in Alaska for the last 20 years, and my role today and going forward is to be a resource to you as members of the committee as you consider updates to statute. I've been involved in all the changes to our tobacco statutes over these last 20 years. Earlier in my career, I was working on the 2004 cigarette tax legislative effort. The piece of statute that you're looking at today is not the cigarette tax, but the other tobacco product tax. And so just to clarify, especially for anybody listening, the difference between those is that cigarettes come in a uniform package, so it's very easy to apply the tax per cigarette. And that's why we have the current per pack tax on cigarettes. And then the tax on everything that's not a cigarette is taxes percentage of wholesale price. And that piece, the other tobacco product tax, that hasn't actually been adjusted since or changed at all, redefined is what we're doing here, since 1997. Hard to believe, but that is now 25 years ago. As you have heard, the market has changed dramatically over those last 25 years, especially when e-cigarettes entered the U.S. market in about 2007. The state doesn't currently tax e-cigarettes because they didn't really exist the last time the statute was updated. And I want to thank the bill sponsor and staff and this committee for your attention to the issue. My organization's mission is to prevent cancer. This means we support tobacco taxes because they are one of the best ways to keep kids from ever starting to use these products. And we are talking about youth prevention here as our primary goal and purpose. For any adults within earshot, I will point out that Alaska's Tobacco Quitline is available at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. With actual FDA-approved cessation products available, as well as coaching for quitting. It's noteworthy that e-cigarettes are not cessation products. There's a lot of confusion I hear around what the FDA is doing. I'm happy to get into that in more detail if there are further questions. But there's a difference between being allowed to be sold, which is what the pre-market approval process was, and it was a retroactive pre-market approval process because these are some e-cigarette products are starting to go through that process now, and FDA is approving them for sale. But they're being approved for sale as tobacco products, not as cessation products. Cessation products are drug delivery devices, and they have a much more stringent rules about safety because they would be regulated as drugs. The tobacco industry actually sued the FDA to keep the products, the e-cigarette products, sold as considered as tobacco products and not those drug delivery devices. The question often comes up, how do these products compare to combusted cigarettes? They are not safe. They do contain carcinogens and heavy metals. Are they less harmful than combusted cigarettes? To answer that question, I'd just ask you to consider this. The combusted cigarette has over 3,000 chemical compounds, and 69 or 70 of those compounds are known human carcinogens. It's not actually difficult to be less harmful than the combusted cigarette. Finally, there was a question that came up about cost to our state. The most recent estimates on tobacco use costs to our state are that tobacco use costs Alaska about $438 million in health care costs, and over $90 million of that is borne by state Medicaid.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I don't see any questions from the committee. Thanks for your testimony today. Next, we're going to go to Megan Volter, Western Regional Director, Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation And Megan, if you'd put yourself on the record and limit your testimony to 5 minutes, please.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Megan Bolter, and I'm here today representing the Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation, also known as Tobacco 21. You can also find us at tobacco21.org, our website. Can you hear me okay?
We're perfect.
Great. We appreciate the opportunity to provide direct testimony regarding the provisions of SB 45 and support its efforts in protecting Alaska's youth from easy access to products when use is intended, create lifelong chronic health issues, and including death. For more than two decades, the Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation has worked to raise the minimum legal sales age for all tobacco and nicotine products to 21. Created in partnership with a consortium of national public health organizations, we have developed model policies which include tobacco retail licensure requirements, compliance programs, and enforcement provisions which ensure that such programs are effective in keeping these addictive and dangerous products out of the hands of vulnerable youth. To date, Alaska is one of 12 states or U.S. territories which does not have a state Tobacco 21 law. SB 45 is a step to ensure that Alaska differentiates itself in bringing forth a state prescription for restricting youth sales and access to tobacco and nicotine products. Moreover, such an effort is consistent with Alaska's well-constructed and managed licensure program, one that is a model of best practices for effective enforcement of existing state law pertaining to tobacco and nicotine sales. Our partners with the American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, the Lung Association, and Tobacco Free Kids all have provided you initial information regarding the stats, how nicotine is highly addictive, it harms the developing brain, and is a gateway to other drug use. Nicotine has been linked to scholastic underachievement, depression, and other mental health disorders in youth. Excuse me. Research tells us, and the tobacco industry knows this as well, that if a person has not started smoking or vaping by age 21, there is a very good chance they never will. One of the most effective means of decreasing tobacco use among children, teens, and youth in general is by restricting access to these products through raising the minimum age of sale, appropriately enforcing such policies, and raising the price of these products. Most recently, a study published this past December by researchers with William Patterson University, the City University of New York, and Georgia State University found that Tobacco 21 laws sizably reduced 12th grade cigarette use by 35% with supplemental reductions for 8th and 10th graders. Even so, such laws were shown to correlate with reductions in e-cigarette use across all grades. Most notably, Tobacco 21 laws were found to reduce cigarette sales by 12.3% and for e-cigarettes by 49.1%. This includes counties with the highest quartile share of individuals under 21 using retail scanner data, national retail scanner data. This is by no stretch the only data which demonstrates the efficacy of well-designed and enforced state Tobacco 21 laws, but is further evidence that Senate Bill 45 is a measure which continues Alaska's status as one of the leaders in the nation with respect to tobacco prevention and control, specifically as it pertains to youth access. As part of my testimony, I was asked to provide some context for the advent and progression of state and local laws restricting sales to youth in light of the federal law. Although it is currently a violation of federal law for any retailer to sell any nicotine or tobacco product to anyone under 21, the law does not preempt cities, counties, or states from passing or enforcing their own age restriction laws, nor those already in place. The law penalizes retailers for selling to youth, not those attempting to purchase these products. The FDA currently oversees enforcement of the minimum legal sales age at 21, but such efforts are meant to supplement, not supplant, local and state enforcement measures. States must demonstrate compliance with the federal age of 21 as a condition of their federal substance abuse prevention and treatment block grants. Under the new provisions, Alaska must enforce the federal age of 21 by demonstrating it has achieved a retailer violation rate of no higher than 20%, or the state risks losing 10%, more than $3 million, in annual substance abuse block grants.
So in order to preserve my time, I won't continue with the federal issue, but I want to finalize my commentary by taking a moment to commend Alaska's retail licensure compliance and enforcement infrastructure, which is critical to implementation of an effective Tobacco 21 law. The Preventing Tobacco Addiction Foundation references Alaska's Tobacco Enforcement and Youth Education Program, and specifically Chief Investigator Joe Darnell's leadership, as it works with other states and territories to create sustainable Tobacco 21 enforcement policies. Your Tobacco Enforcement Program's commitment to the protection of youth from smoking and access to tobacco products to set the bar for others in keeping aligned with the federal law, as well as maintaining one of the lowest SINAR violation rates in the United States.
Thank you for your testimony. Please send in any other comments you haven't got on the line. Thank you. We appreciate it. And that closes our invited testimony, and now we're going to go and open public testimony. And looks like first in the queue is Mr. Hancock's with R.J. Reynolds in New York. Mr. Hancock's, if you're there, please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes.
Sure, thank you. I'm David Hancock's, and I was the Director of State Audits in the New York State Comptroller's Office. I've written and taught on issues focused on assessing government programs and policies, such as the bill before you now. While R.J. Reynolds has compensated me for my time preparing these comments, the opinions are my own. They're informed by my years of auditing government programs and policies. I speak in opposition to SB 45. SB 45 taxes e-cigarettes at a higher rate than the most dangerous tobacco products, cigarettes. You can expect that e-cigarette sales will decrease and cigarette use will increase. Traditional combustible cigarettes and e-cigarettes are economic substitutes. Users of these products may substitute one for the other as costs increase or decrease. For example, after Minnesota became the first state in the nation to impose an excise tax on e-cigarettes, cigarette smoking increased and smoking cessation decreased. As many as 32,000 Minnesotans who might have traded their cigarettes for safer e-cigarettes were diverted from smoking cessation by the e-cigarette tax. SB 45 results in Alaskans paying only $2 in state excise tax on a pack of cigarettes while facing an excise tax nearly $1.50 higher for a Vuse Solo e-cigarette cartridge. And in September last year, the FDA determined that marketing Vuse Solo is, quote, appropriate for the protection of public health, end of quote, the first and only e-cigarette authorized for marketing by the FDA. In Anchorage, where the city already levies an excise tax on e-cigarettes, the tax on Vuse Solo jumps to $6, three times that of a pack of cigarettes. A reasonable risk-based tax structure offers smokers financial encouragement to make the switch from combustible cigarettes to less risky products like cigarettes, e-cigarettes. Decreasing consumer acceptability of these products through taxation limits the benefits Alaska's adult smokers should reap from the FDA's evidence-driven, science-backed assessment of tobacco harm reduction. Please consider all the unintended consequences of this proposed tax increase on your citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hancock. Hunter Johnson, Soldotna. Can you hear us, Hunter? And if you can, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, this is Hunter Johnson from Soldotna, Alaska. And I oppose the bill, the SB 45 bill, because I think children here, or the underage youth, are going to find a way, no matter what, to get their hands on either cigarettes or alcohol or vaping products in general. Raising the age isn't going to stop them for what they want to do, that is bring it to school or, you know, bring it wherever they want to go. I know a lot of parents let their children use e-cigarettes and consume alcohol and cigarettes itself. So raising age and wholesale tax isn't going to stop them from what they're going to do. Like I said, parents are going to give their kids money. Kids are going to find ways to get money. You know, if that's mowing the lawns in the summer or plowing someone's driveway, they're going to get money somehow, and they're going to do what they're going to want to do. So raising the age of 21 or even making the wholesale tax a lot more than it is right now, I think isn't going to stop them for what they're going to do.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Wade Nelson in Soldotna. We're staying on the in the Kenai Soldotna area. Mr. Nelson, if you can hear us, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Sir, my name is Wade Nelson from Soldotna, Alaska. I had one thing that I wanted to direct towards. I forgot what her last name was, but Emily. She had said, as far as like the health with e-cigarettes, the Royal College of Physicians in the UK actually put on a study in 2016 proving it's 95% safer than smoking traditional cigarettes. And that study has been backed by the medical industry in the UK, the hospitals out there, Samuel General Hospital in the West Brom, which actually has vape shops in the hospital. Doctors out there actually prescribe it to get their patients off the cigarettes. And also there's no recorded deaths worldwide from nicotine vapes in general.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Rich Moranos, Professor, Georgetown University. Please put yourself on the record,
good
sir.
Good afternoon.
In 2 minutes, please.
You guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you very much. My name is Rich Marianos. I currently am a professor at Georgetown University, retired assistant director with ATF, serving 27 years in law enforcement. I'm currently a member of the International Association of Chiefs of Police and the Police Executive Research Forum. What I want to talk about very quickly is something I don't think has been touched on, is that the higher taxes and flavor bans associated with these products are creating crime all over the United States, and I'm fearful that this will happen in Alaska. We have issues with cross-border sales out there right now, especially in Canada, where there's actual shops on the reservation that are selling illegal vape products, illegal tobacco products, which are easily transported across international borders into Alaska, where they can be sold on the streets to people that can't afford these products through traditional means. We talk about this because it means a dramatic increase in street sales to kids, as we've seen all over the United States. And if you have any form of tobacco harm reduction in your state, this throws that completely out the window because it forces young adults and people that can't afford these products into the black market. In terms of the law enforcement issues that are taking place, there's an increase of 150% in smash and grabs now because of the difficulty in purchasing these products with criminal organizations of gangs, organized crime, that are doing smash and grabs at convenience stores and locations and then selling them on the street. In terms of conventional tobacco cigarettes, they're selling Lucy's out there in some communities for $2 a piece to young adults. And in this case, it's making what the traditional narcotics market had almost foolish, where they're making $5,000 a day just selling tobacco products.
Thank you for your testimony. Your 2 minutes is up, sir. If you'd want to send the rest of it to the committee, that's fine. Please do so. Next, we're going to go to Cody Walker in Soldotna. Mr. Walker, if you can hear us, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, my name is Cody Walker. I'm from Soldotna, Alaska. And I did have some questions for the gentleman that said what was in the e-liquid. He said there was formaldehyde, and there is no traces of formaldehyde. There's no traces of nickel. The only metal in a vape is a stainless steel little mesh screen that heats up and creates water vapor. It's not even an aerosol. So my question is, how are you going to make a law for something that you're ignorant on yourself?
So do you have any more testimony? Because we're asking the questions. Are you for the bill or against the bill?
100% against it.
Thank you. Next, we're going to Stephen Greenhut in Sacramento. He's the Western Director for R Street Institute. 2 minutes, sir.
Yes, thank you. Stephen Greenhut, R Street Institute. We're a free market think tank, and we do a lot of research in tobacco harm reduction. We're here to oppose Senate Bill 45. It has two key changes. The first would essentially raise the legal age to purchase tobacco products. We support that. Our research shows that higher age reduces teen access to cigarettes. The second change, however, undermines that important goal of reducing smoking. This section of SB 45 would impose a significant tax on electronic smoking products, and that would end up encouraging adult smokers to keep smoking cigarettes. Alaska's smoking rate's 18% higher than the U.S. national average. That's a deadly proposition, given that vaping products are far safer than combustible tobacco products. Not safe, of course, but safer. Another person pointed to Public Health England, which found them 95% safer. R Street's harm reduction research has found that e-cigarette users are much more sensitive to price increases than combustible cigarette users, making them more likely to switch back to combustibles if vapor is highly taxed. We're all in favor of FDA-approved cessation products, but research shows that only a small percentage of smokers use them, and we know the FDA is notoriously slow on things. So finally, nicotine's a highly addictive substance, but is not what actually causes cancer and disease. Those culprits are the tar and toxic acids that are released from burning tobacco. So we respectfully oppose SB 45 because the taxation portion of it would encourage people to keep smoking cigarettes. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Mr. Bentley, Reason Foundation, Arlington, Virginia. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you so much. As I said, my name is Guy Bentley. I'm the Director of Consumer Freedom at the Reason Foundation, and we're a public policy think tank. Taxing e-cigarettes presents a very different challenge to taxing traditional cigarettes. Cigarette taxes are necessary to ensure smokers don't impose costs on non-smokers. But as has been said, e-cigarettes are a dramatically safer form of nicotine consumption and have proved successful in transitioning smokers away from cigarettes. When Congress was deliberating a federal e-cigarette tax last year, 7 PhD health economists wrote to members to explain that, quote, scientific evidence supports e-cigarettes providing immediate benefits as a harm reduction product. Overall, our scientific opinion is that raising taxes on e-cigarettes and smokeless tobacco products to levels equivalent to cigarettes will increase cigarette use across all populations and cause significant public health harm, end quote. As you've heard, Minnesota's e-cigarette tax unfortunately resulted in 32,000 fewer people quitting smoking. Somebody asked about the population of vapers. Vapers are primarily concentrated in households earning less than $40,000 a year, and those without a college degree are twice as likely to vape as those who do have a college degree. Also, it should be recognized that according to the latest 2021 data, 87% of high schoolers are not using e-cigarettes at all, and 92% are not using them frequently. And thankfully, youth vaping has fallen to its lowest point in 7 years. Thank you so much, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Amanda Wheeler, American Vapor Manufacturers, Arizona. If you put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in opposition to SB 45. I'm the president of the American Vapor Manufacturers Association. We speak today on behalf of our member businesses in Alaska, their employees, and their customers' right to switch to vaping products. While we applaud SB 45's provision to raise the age to purchase vapor products to 21, we oppose the taxation, flavor ban, and insurance components of the bill. It's important to note that according to the CDC's National Youth Tobacco Survey, youth vaping in the United States has decreased by nearly 60% in 2019 and 2020. In the United States, nearly 15 million adults use vaping products in an effort to quit the combustible tobacco products that lead to disease and death in nearly half of all their users. In fact, over 480,000 Americans die each year from cigarette smoking. For context, this is about 100,000 more deaths per year than those attributed to COVID-19 in 2020 or 2021. Vaping has been proven to be the most effective tool to date to address the smoking epidemic in our country. According to a recent Cochrane review, 9 to 14% of people using vaping successfully quit smoking, compared to only 6% with traditional nicotine replacement therapy and 4% attempting to quit cold turkeys. Another 2020 study published by Oxford University Press found that 63% of adults use vaping flavors other than tobacco. Moreover, a June 2020 study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Network found that relative to vaping tobacco flavors, vaping flavored e-cigarettes did not lead to increased youth smoking, but was associated with an increase in adult smoking cessation. Furthermore, there is growing evidence that banning flavors leads to increased youth cigarette smoking. A 2021 study from Yale School of Public Health found that San Francisco's flavor ban was associated with more than doubled odds of recent smoking among underage high school students. Why would Alaska implement a policy that is guaranteed to deprive adult smokers of the best smoking cessation tool at their disposal while also nearly ensuring an increase in youth cigarette smoking rates? It is worth noting that this policy would also shutter countless Alaska small businesses. Flavored products generally comprise more than 90% of vaping liquid sales in locally owned vape shops. These businesses rigorously check IDs and ensure that products are sold only to adults. This is further real-world evidence that adults prefer flavors. Turning to the tax component of SB 45, a 2020 article in the New York Times.
Thank you for your testimony. Could you send the rest of your information to the committee? Next, we're going to Justin Hansen in Kenai, Youth Encouraging Alaska Health. 2 minutes.
Hello, can the council hear me?
Yes, 2 minutes, please.
Okay, my name is Justin Hansen, and I support the bill that's in favor right now. The most support is on lines 26 and 27 on page 3. The Internet has been known as a teen's avenue to obtain illegal and prohibited goods through what are colloquially called shady websites. The requirement of a third-party verification, as amended on lines 24 through 27 on page 26, will make such purchase off shady websites previously used illegal, if not impossible. It's also very important that the code amendment includes for personal use. This also makes sure that children and teens cannot use the names of older siblings or contacts to possess and use e-cigarettes. I also support the amendments found on lines 6 and 7 of page 7. This amendment is instrumental in further protecting our children from the dangers of e-cigarettes. In a situation where a minor could intercept a package purchased by someone else for their own consumption, instead of this being able to happen, the amendment makes a requirement that ensures that legal adults rather than children are able to gain possession of e-cigarettes. The amendment on lines 21 through 25 of page 28 is also extremely important in that it makes sure that people who sell e-cigarettes to our children illegally can be prosecuted in the Alaska judicial system. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Senator Wilson has a question for you.
No question. Mr. Hansen, if you could send that to the committee in writing, you were sort of muffled and wasn't very clear, so I think if you could send your testimony to the Senate Finance Committee would be helpful.
Thank you, I will.
Next, Alex McDonald of Fairbanks. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, my name is Alex McDonald. I'm calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. I smoked for 19 years, and in 2013, my mom, who is a nurse practitioner, gave everyone in the family vape starter kits. We've all been smoke-free since then. These products work. Watching my grandma die of lung cancer, I kept smoking. I really don't know where to start on this bill because it has so many things that have been brought up and are some of them are outdated. As far as the flavor ban, President Trump tried proposing one, and that was shot down as bad public health policy. Vape tax was in the Build Back Better bill, and they pulled a federal vape tax out of it because it was bad public health policy. And as far as flavor ban, what's a flavor? I mean, tobacco, is that a flavor? I smoked. I don't want to taste tobacco. That's like telling a recovering alcoholic, just drink O'Doul's. You'll be fine. I mean, it makes no sense. I like a variety of flavors, just like when I go out to eat, I eat different things. And I would also like to bring up, people have been talking about online sales. That's pretty much gone by the wayside because Congress added vapor products to the PACT Act. So now it's more like shipping guns where it's got to go business to business. It's not being shipped to people's homes. So people can't buy in bulk and sell them on social media, as has been the case. And that was testified to in the companion bill, House Bill 110. The invited testimony there said her daughter was getting it on Snapchat. And when asked if this bill would help, she said, no, kids aren't going through legal sources. So they're not paying taxes. They're not getting carded. They're getting them from their friends. You know, she goes, I thought it was a good idea, and then I started looking into it. And I don't think any of the provisions of the bill will do anything. So that being said, there's different tax rates throughout the state, which would, if statewide tax was put in place, different areas would be taxed proportionately different, which is crazy. There's
you got 15 seconds.
Okay, and the insurance bond is ridiculous. So thank you for your time. Please oppose this bill.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. McDonald. Next, we're going to Joe Barrier, Vice President, State Government Affairs, Jewel Labs. If you can hear us, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Thanks very much. If you can hear me, Co-Chairs Pitch of Stevin and members of the committee. My name is John Barrier. I'm Vice President of State Government Affairs for Jewel Labs. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. Jewel's mission is to transition the world's 1 billion adult smokers away from combustible cigarettes, eliminate their use, and combat underage usage of our products. We believe that non-combustible products like electronic nicotine delivery systems or vapor products or electronic smoking products can offer adult smokers a potentially less harmful alternative to combustible cigarettes, and in doing so, reduce the death and disease associated with tobacco use. In addition to my comments today, I've submitted a written testimony for the record. For now, I'd like to highlight a few important considerations related to SB 45. First, Tobacco 21 is an effective evidence-based intervention to combat underage use of tobacco and nicotine products. Excuse me. We are in strong support of the T21 provision in SB 45 and have worked at the federal and state levels across the country to advocate for the adoption of T21. However, this bill has become more complicated with some amendments that would severely restrict or eliminate access to alternative nicotine products. Given its scientific expertise and public health mandate, we believe the FDA is best positioned to assess the role these products play in helping adult smokers move away from combustible cigarettes, while also being kept out of the hands of youth. Through its pre-market tobacco application process, which you've heard a little bit about today, the FDA to date has taken action on about 98% of the total applications submitted, and we would encourage the Senate to allow the FDA to finalize their assessment of these products before considering additional regulations, which may drive Alaskans back to combustible cigarettes. Finally, Jewel supports risk-proportionate regulation of our products, including a reasonable tax structure. Our concern is that the 75% excise tax rate proposed, particularly when combined with local taxes on these products, is exorbitant and will drive people to use traditional cigarettes or seek out cheaper products purchased through illicit markets. We appreciate the intent of SB 45 to protect public health, but the bill beyond the T21 provision will unintentionally drive Alaskans toward combustible cigarettes. We would urge you to move the bill as standalone T21 legislation and work with stakeholders to develop a thoughtful, risk-proportionate tax framework for all tobacco and nicotine products in the state.
Thank you for your testimony.
Happy to take any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Sean DeSilva, member of the Alaska Smoke-Free Trade Association, Anchorage, Alaska. Sean, put yourself on the record, please, in 2 minutes.
Hi there. My name is Sean DeSilva, and I'm the co-owner of 3 adult vapor stores. One in Fairbanks, one in Anchorage, and one in Wasilla, and I'm an active member of the Alaska Smoke-Free Trade Association. I'm urging a no vote on the bill as it's currently proposed, as I think it would hurt those adults who have switched or are planning to switch off of combustible cigarettes. One of the bill's underlying premises is a youth epidemic, and we believe the T21 would make a significant impact. There has been data presented where the youth vaping rate is up, but a few people have stated, the rate is down 62% in the last 2 years. Additionally, there's an insurance bonding requirement in this bill. Last year when this bill was proposed, I had checked with my insurance broker, because if there's manufacturers and distributors, and I have to have a distributor's license to bring product into Alaska to our stores, the cost would be about $350,000 to go into being compliance. I don't think any individual store, the ones that are left, would be able to cover that, and I think that's something that you need to consider. I have not run across that before. The other item there is the flavor ban. I think you've heard a little bit about the idea that flavors appeal to youth. But again, youth vaping is already dropping dramatically, even with flavors being available. It's also important to note the Yale School of Public Health had a quoting from their study. It says, think about youth preferences. Some kids who vape choose e-cigarettes over combustible cigarette products because of the flavors. For those individuals as would-be vapers with similar preferences, banning flavors may remove their primary motivation for choosing vaping over smoking, pushing some of them back. So we need to be cautious about this. And remember, we have all these adults that have stopped and are looking at stopping. And I think it's super important that we not lose sight of that, while at the same time maintaining the protecting our kids. So thank you for the opportunity to speak on SB 45. We did submit a letter on behalf of our association, and we'll certainly be following up with you. And I'm available for any questions that you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Elizabeth Hicks, Consumer Price Choice Center, Detroit, Michigan. Ms. Hicks, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Elizabeth Hicks. I'm the U.S. Affairs Analyst at the Consumer Choice Center, and I want to thank this committee for their time. Simply put, Senate Bill 45 will do more harm than good if passed. Enacting a significant increase in taxes on vaping products will lead to much higher prices for consumers, pushing many former smokers to switch back to smoking combustible tobacco. As we heard in previous testimony, 700 Alaskans sadly lose their lives to smoking-related illnesses every year. Considering that studies have shown vaping to be 95% less harmful than smoking combustible tobacco, like cigarettes, ensuring that the cost of vaping products do not increase will ultimately lead to fewer cigarette smoking-related deaths in Alaska. Additionally, a 75% tax on vaping products will disproportionately harm lower-income individuals throughout the state, effectively robbing them of even more of their income and penalizing them for choosing a safer and more responsible alternative to smoking. On the flip side, it's been reported that Medicaid costs caused by smoking combustible tobacco in Alaska were over $93 million last year. We can expect that number to substantially increase if this bill is passed, as vapers will be financially encouraged to switch back to smoking, further exacerbating smoking-related illnesses while taxpayers are expected to pick up the tab. Furthermore, local vape shops within Alaska will feel the financial repercussions of a 75% tax increase, as consumers will be less inclined to purchase vapor products. After already suffering through the economic hardships of the pandemic, this bill could effectively kill many of these small businesses already struggling to stay afloat. Although this bill is certainly well-intentioned, the proposed 75% tax is simply misguided. If this committee wishes to protect public health, small businesses throughout the state, and consumer choices in Alaska, then I strongly encourage them to reject this bill in its current form. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Crystal Mead, Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, Anchorage. Ms. Mead, if you'd put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Crystal Mead. I'm the program manager for the Tobacco Prevention Program at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in Anchorage, Alaska. And I am testifying today in support of SB 45, and here are my reasons why. We know that by restricting youth access to tobacco products, including electronic nicotine devices or ENDS, we ultimately can prevent youth from ever starting using tobacco products on a regular basis. Those restrictions include strategies covered by SB 45, such as taxing ENDS like other tobacco products and restricting access to these products, including raising the purchase age to 21. Since 2003, the percentage of youth who smoke cigarettes in Alaska has lowered significantly and is currently around 8% statewide. Currently, our rate for youth using ENDS is at around 26% statewide. This number has risen significantly over the last 5 years and is concerning. Lastly, we know that nicotine can harm the developing adolescent brain, and that the adolescent brain keeps developing until about the age of 25. These harms include increased anxiety, mood disorders, and attention deficit. It also makes it harder to quit in the future and puts our youth at risk for becoming regular smokers or even a dual user where they are using multiple tobacco products, including ENDS, as well as cigarettes. Overall, this puts our youth at risk for a lifelong struggle with tobacco use and increases the chances of them going into adulthood with a tobacco addiction and nicotine dependence, and increases their risk for health issues caused by tobacco use later on in life. That's all that I had. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Terry Palmquist in Anchorage. And Terry, put your Tenny, Palmquist in 2 minutes, please.
Hi, I'm Tenny Palmquist from Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you to the chairman and the committee for listening. I'm very much in favor of this bill. I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm a great-grandmother. I'm also a cancer survivor. And in raising the age to 21 and taking care of getting e-cigarettes out of the hands of children is extremely important. Everyone that has testified so far has not talked about this bubble disease that is created by e-cigarettes. And I, you know, if it starts in their lungs when they're young, my understanding is that it never goes away, which could cause further problems with COPD or emphysema or some of the other health issues. So I'm very much in favor of this bill, and I hope the committee moves it forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. If you could send your testimony to the Senate Finance Committee, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. You were a little muffled coming in, but we got most of it. So thank you. Next, we're going to Terrence Robbins in Ketchikan. Mr. Robbins.
Good afternoon.
2 minutes, please.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Terrence Robbins. I live in Ketchikan, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I wish to share my support for SB 45 for the following reasons. As a person who has facilitated many youth tobacco cessation classes and who has spent years involved in tobacco use prevention, I've learned much about the negative effects of nicotine use and the benefits of prevention efforts to reduce youth and adult tobacco use in our communities. One of the most effective measures to reduce youth initiation is to increase the cost of nicotine products, which both decreases the availability of nicotine products like vapes to youth because it becomes too expensive for them. But it also encourages adults on fixed incomes or poorer adults to quit. When it's too expensive for a youth to purchase the vapes, they're less likely to become addicted to begin with, and that's the important part here. An addiction, the addiction is real. Imagine from your own younger days what you consider to be a bad smoking habit. A pack a day, two packs a day. Now, how difficult was that to quit for the people you know? I mean, did they even quit? Kids who are addicted to vapes are consuming, in my classes, my clinics, several packs a day worth of nicotine. They're buying these Puff Bar XLs, things like that. They report to me that a nicotine replacement patch, when they're prescribed one by their clinician, has little to no effect on their cravings. A recent study by the School of Public Health finds that 1 in 5 youth who start out vaping end up smoking traditional cigarettes anyway. So I'm just not buying the arguments that people are going to switch if you ban vaping, because they're going to switch anyway. In Ketchikan, the voters passed a tobacco tax with a vape tax. And after 1 year, according to the state's BRFIS, and this is really important, adult smoking rates declined 21.4% in 1 year.
Please send the rest of your testimony to the Senate Finance Committee. Thank you. We're going to Robin Menard, Chief Communications Officer, Matsu Foundation, Wasilla. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please. Did they go away? All right, we're going to go to Lindsay Stroud, Taxpayers Alliance, Washington, D.C. Lindsay Stroud, can you hear us? And put yourself on the record if you can. 2 minutes testimony, please.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your time. My name is Lindsay Stroud, and I'm director of the Consumer Center at the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. I did submit written testimony, so I'll keep this brief, but I did want to address some of the points that were brought up previously. First, this legislation is relying on outdated youth use data. Several studies have found that nationally, current vapor product use among high school students has declined by 41.8% since 2020 and by 58.9% since 2019. Regarding authorization from the FDA has authorized one e-cigarette product as appropriate for the protection of public health. Currently, there are over 100 e-liquid companies that are still permitted to market their products, and they are awaiting their own FDA decision on their own pre-market tobacco product application, or the PMTA that you've heard about previously. After that marketing order, companies can apply for a modified risk tobacco product order that permits these companies to market their product as a reduced risk product. So I guess when people talk about like safer, for the record, the FDA does not recognize any safe tobacco product. They also don't approve tobacco products, they authorize them. The FDA has granted 18 of the modified risk orders so far. And since there's only one e-cigarette company, of course, none of them have gotten any of them yet. Formaldehyde, interesting, we're still bringing that up since it was debunked probably back in 2016. One study claimed that formaldehyde was being produced by e-cigarettes, and unfortunately what the researchers had done is they had overheated the vaping device to get those levels. Regarding popcorn lung, this was actually originally linked among microwave popcorn factory workers that had inhaled diacetyl. researchers had found that e-liquids had high diacetyl in their products, and so the industry actually removed those flavors. Also, that study overheated the vapor, and it's also important to note that cigarette smokers are exposed to 750 times more diacetyl in cigarettes, and there's been not one single case of popcorn lung. And then just lastly, it was said that e-cigarette use leads to smoking. There's no data to support that. If anything, it's actually helped accelerate a significant decline in smoking.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Robin Menard, Chief Communications Officer, Mattsu Health Foundation. Are you there?
I'm here this time. Thank you very much.
Sorry. 2 minutes, please. Thank you.
You betcha. Senators Bishop and Stedman and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. My name is Robin Menard, and I serve as Chief Communications Officer for the Mattsu Health Foundation. We're here to talk today about this bill, and we are in strong support. Most tobacco use begins before age 18, and programs that prevent the uptake of smoking among young people are a recommended component of a comprehensive tobacco control effort. The ultimate effect of e-cigarettes on public health will depend in large part on what happens in the policy environment. We already know about the effectiveness of tobacco taxes. They are the very best way to support the non-use of tobacco among youth. A peer review of studies across North America on this issue found that tobacco taxes benefit smokers who quit, reduce the overall consumption of tobacco, and put smoking cessation on the radar for those who continue to smoke. Increased taxes also have a positive impact on non-smokers by reducing their exposure to secondhand smoke and secondhand vapor. Today, you have the opportunity to enhance the health and wellness of our citizens while still allowing consumers of e-cigarettes to make that choice to use them if that's what they want. We encourage you to move Senate Bill 45 forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to Jay Oku, I believe, in California. If you can hear us, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Finance Committee, thank you for hearing my testimony. My name is Jay Oku, consumer advocate at Five Ponds. We've worked on a federal and state level to compassionately educate lawmakers since 2012 and help adults transition from smoking with maturely branded, meticulously manufactured tobacco harm reduction products. Basically, we're looking at opposing SB 45, the bond measure, the tax, and the flavor ban, which, like in other parts of the country, have only seen success in forcing citizens back to smoking and create a dangerous black market. It makes criminals out of good people and sentences them to a life of smoking-related disease. You can combine all the suicides, murders, car accidents, fentanyl, COVID, and opioid deaths together, and they pale in comparison to the 480,000 deaths per year related to smoking-related disease. This technology is a solution to the tobacco problem, and it helps adult smokers disassociate nicotine from the taste of tobacco. It helps them wean off. Senator Stevens, thank you for your service. I congratulate you for never using nicotine. That's huge. The fact is that millions of neurodiverse adults that use nicotine to help them manage their depression, their ADHD, their anxiety, PTSD in these perilous times, it's just a fact. They're using it. They find comfort in using nicotine without the tar. And even Mitch Zeller of the FDA said it's not the nicotine that kills, it's the tobacco. Senator Wilson said it very well. This is a massive tax on a class that cannot afford it. Physicians of adult tobacco users absolutely support this delivery method. The technology was founded by a legion of passionate small businesses who have collectively converted over 10 million smokers to this superior form of nicotine delivery. Specialty of adult vape shops are not the culprit. From January 1, 2018 to September 30, 2019, the FDA administered 464 tobacco age compliance inspections in Alaska, in which agents used a minor in an attempt to purchase tobacco products. Of those, 1% of all compliance checks involved the sale of e-cigarette or vaping devices. I'd like to propose a solution, enforce the law. It's not specialty stores selling these. It's the black market. Create guidelines, perhaps like Canada, with maybe no colors on packaging, if that suits you. But I respect your decision to serve the community. However, the primary reason why U.S. citizens are losing faith and trust in their political representatives in higher numbers than ever before is because they've been neglected. Our health has been neglected. Our freedom of choice is being neglected and ignored. So it's important that you do your research on this, like a couple of people have done in there. But obviously,
thank
even
you for
with
your
Mr.
testimony.
Lampkin,
send the rest of your comments to Finance, Mr. Connolly. In Medford, New Jersey, American Vaping Association.
Thank you, sir. My name is Gregory Conley. I run a nonprofit called the American Vaping Association, which advocates for pro-public health policies with the aim of reducing smoking-related disease and death. You have heard from many people today making great arguments, and I don't think you need to hear much from another person not from Alaska, but I will just say I'm glad this bill is before a finance committee, because vaping and smoking policy acts as the ultimate lesson in economics. Cigarette smokers, who are primarily low income, are inelastic in their purchasing decisions. In other words, you need a big change in price, like a big tax increase, to really spur a large number of adult smokers to quit. But with alternatives like vaping, smokers can be fickle because of their brand loyalty. When vaping taxes rise precipitously or flavors are banned, what the evidence has been showing time and time again is that both adults and youth smoke more cigarettes. We would just encourage you, there's a bill in the House, HB 2, which aims solely to raise the legal age to 21 in alliance with federal law. We encourage you to look at that bill and also speak to Sean DeSilva, who's running that Alaska vape group. He's a great voice for small businesses in your state. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Cassandra Moody in Soldotna. Cassandra, 2 minutes, please.
Hi, my name is Cassandra Moody, and I have been cigarette-free for as of the 5th 2 years, and that's all thanks to vaping. And I wanted to discuss the flavor ban. Quite honestly, I smoked cigarettes for almost 20 years. I don't want to taste tobacco-flavored vapes. I like the fruits and all of the different options. So I oppose this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Fairbanks to Jesse Walton. Jesse, if you'd put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Hi, my name is Jesse. I am calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. I oppose SB 45. I used vaping to quit smoking. I smoked for 14 years. I started at the age of 13 and quit at the age of 27. I was 6 years under the legal age to purchase tobacco products. I wasn't even old enough to hold a real job, so that kind of means that the tax isn't going to really affect the kid. Vaping is a harm reduction. Taxing vapor products will push people back to smoking combustible products. My e-liquid is currently $26 for 60 mils. With a 75% wholesale tax, it would raise my cost to $34. A vape tax is bad policy. A flavor ban is dumb because I use a chocolate mint candy flavor to get off combustibles. I've never vaped a tobacco flavor, and I like my fruity, sweet vapes. And that's all that I have for testimony today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Ben Raj Durai, Americans for Tax Reform, Washington, D.C. Good afternoon. Put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Hey, this is Ben Rajadurai with the Americans for Tax Reform in opposition to Senate Bill 45. Data from the National Adult Tobacco Survey has consistently demonstrated that tobacco tax increases have no statistically significant impact on the prevalence of smoking among those with household incomes of less than $25,000. 72% of smokers are from low-income communities. Tax increase on these people trying to use safer alternatives to quit will just put unnecessary hardship on them, on families that are already struggling to make ends meet. Studies have proven that vaping is 95% safer than combustible cigarettes, while at least twice as effective as more traditional nicotine replacement therapies. Studies have consistently shown that bills like this prevent smokers from quitting smoking and using more safer alternatives, and as a result, we oppose this bill.
Thank you. We're going to go to Jamie Morgan, Government Relations in Sacramento for the American Heart Association. Jamie, can you hear us? And if you can, 2 minutes and start your testimony.
I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jamie Morgan with the American Heart Association, and I am pleased to provide comments today on SB 45. The American Heart Association has long advocated for passage of policies that raise the tax on tobacco, limit exposure to secondhand smoke, discourage the use of tobacco by youth, and increase access to cessation services for those addicted to tobacco. We know the way to fight misinformation is with legitimate scientific findings. The science to date is clear. Vaping and nicotine are not safe, especially for youth and their growing brains and bodies. You've heard the startling statistics about the rise in youth consumption of e-cigarettes. We are truly in the midst of an epidemic, contrary to some of the other comments you've heard. Youth e-cigarette use is the most commonly used tobacco product by youth in adolescence. E-cigarettes are not safe and increases your odds of having a stroke, heart attack, and coronary artery heart disease. Recent research published in the Journal of the American Heart Association found that using e-cigarettes damages the arteries and blood vessel functions, much like smoking traditional cigarettes. Young adults using e-cigarettes experienced arterial stiffness and blood vessel damage, similar to those who smoke traditional cigarettes, and there was no evidence that using e-cigarettes reduced the cardiovascular injury associated with the use of combustible tobacco products. Furthermore, they can contain unusually high levels of nicotine. As the chair noted, one e-cigarette-filled pod can contain as much nicotine as an entire pack of cigarettes, and kids are sometimes vaping 2 to 4 pods a day. Based on what we know about nicotine exposure, especially at high levels, vaping as a teen can be highly addictive and lead to lifelong use. In addition, for youth, we have seen consequences related to cognitive ability, emotional problems, and addiction. In closing, we support efforts to decrease consumption of these harmful products to our youth. We do not support penalties for youth possession, rather those who sell, and billion-dollar industry that targets our youth. Finally, we know that young people prove sensitive to increased prices of tobacco products, as higher prices are associated with reduced use of these products among adolescents. We believe that raising the tax on e-cigarettes will reduce youth, save lives.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to Adam Dotson in Soldotna. 2 minutes, Adam. Please put yourself on the record.
Hi, this is Adam Dotson in Soldotna.
Yes, we can hear you. 2 minutes, please.
Okay, so I've been smoking for 20 years, and smoking cigarettes, I'm finally starting to get into vaping over the past year and a half, and I'm saving, on average, about $300 every month going with vaping. That's money that I can directly use to support my family now. Opposing this bill puts $300 into my household every month. I think it'd just be a horrible idea, and I like the flavors. If I wanted to vape tobacco flavored, I'd still be smoking. So I strongly oppose the bill in favor of putting food on my family's table.
All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. Public testimony is closed. Next, any further committee discussion for today? We've set this bill aside. Tomorrow morning, February 3rd, 9 a.m., is the Legislative Finance Division baseline. In just 1 second, we're done for the day. We're adjourned at 2:55.